show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
But ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, a Baseball Prospectus affiliate. Folks, it's that semi-sad time of year where we've reached right around July 4th. It's the All-Star break. There's no baseball. Now, there has been some baseball since the last time we recorded, including the All-Star game itself, but there's no baseball tonight or tomorrow. So, unfortunately, we don't have as much to talk about, but we're still here. We've still got plenty to talk about, some news items, and a little bit of a mid-season review as we go over some of our early season predictions and see how they're tracking so far as we hit the not the midway point in games, but the midway point in baseball's eyes, as they tend to demarcate the season by the All-Star break. So with that, we'll jump right into introductions. Of course, I'm Jeff Herr. With me, as always, is the not too hot, but always cool, Michael Engel. Mike, how are you doing? It's 98 degrees today, I saw, on my way home.
Yeah, it was
a hot day.
It was pretty hot outside. Yeah, it's the typical Midwestern summer kind of week.
Yes.
Right now. It's not fun.
So I don't know who your electrical provider is in Lawrence. Aquila, maybe? I don't think Aquila's still around, actually, but Westar.
Yeah, they were. I remember them.
They got bought out by KCPL not a long time ago, but like 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah. But yeah, it's Westar for me.
Westar. Okay. So anyway, the reason I say that is because KCPL has this thing where you can sign up. Have you heard those Nest thermostats? Have you seen those?
Yeah.
Really souped up, nice ones. So you can contact KCPL. This is all tipped to all the listeners out there. And you can sign up for this thing. It's called Rush Hour Rewards Program. And they will come to your house. They will give you a Nest thermostat for free. These things are like $300, right? $200-$300, depending on if they're on sale or not or whatever. But they'll come to your house. They'll give you a Nest thermostat for free. They'll install it for free. The only catch is you have to sign up for this Rush Hour program where, you know, in hot summer months or whatever, any particular time where there's high energy consumption, they'll do this thing where they cycle your air conditioner on and off. So, like, excuse me. So, like, it goes off for 15 minutes, and then it goes back on, and then off, and then back on, etc. So, but they're supposed to limit it between 8 and 5, so when the majority of people aren't home. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, it's only 15 hours at a time. And we got it installed earlier this year, and they said last year they had, like, 5, maybe 6 rush hour days. But anyway, today was the first rush hour day. Since I've been in this program, we got it in March, I think. So got my notification on my phone because you can control the Nest app from your phone to change the temperature wherever you are, as long as you have an internet connection. This is technology great. But so I got the notification. So that today was so far the hottest day of the year, at least in terms of KCPL energy consumption. So
it begins.
That. So it begins. It's only going to get worse for the next 6 weeks, probably, at least. Speaking of which, I guess not getting worse, but just speaking of the next 6 weeks, you know, we've got the Royals. So right now, when we last spoke with you, the Royals were going for and ended up obtaining the sweep against the Seattle Mariners last week, which put them to a season high 4 games above 500 at 44-40. Then unfortunately they ran into the buzzsaw that is the Los Angeles Dodgers, who are fantastic at the baseballs. They are
they're okay.
Very, very good, including a Clayton Kershaw matchup on the final game of that series, and they put up. I mean, they competed, but sort of. You know, the game on Saturday was the closest, went into extra innings, and they of course walked four straight batters and walked in the winning run for a walk off, which is never a good thing to do. But
it's
they did it anyway.
Way to lose, yeah.
Yes, very painful. Especially after coming back, at least was it twice they came back in that game to tie it?
It was 3-0 Dodgers to start out with, and then they got a run in three different innings to tie it, and then they took the lead, and then
they took the lead, yeah, and then Dodgers tied it.
The Dodgers tied it with a homer, and even the Royals had Eric Hosmer reached on an error and got to second base, and he didn't even advance. There was a strikeout, I think a ground out, and then. Oh, there was also a deep fly ball. So if they could have moved him to third, you know, he'd have been able to score on the fly ball, but didn't happen. So
did not happen.
So they got swept for the first time in a while. You know, the Dodgers lost like four times in the last month. So it's not really like there's any shame in losing to a team like that, but you know, they did miss that one opportunity. They didn't really do much in the first game of the series. They didn't really figure out Kershaw in the last game of the series. And then the middle one, they kind of had it, and then they let it slip away. So a little disappointing into the first half. But, you know, they by sweeping the Mariners, they were guaranteed to be over 500 at the break, which, you know, if you'd have said that in May, that would have been pretty surprising. So,
yep.
June and early July was pretty productive. So, I think you could complain about some things, but I don't know if you'd complain too much. So it's not the ideal way to end the first half, but you know,
it's the way they ended it.
It's what happened. Yeah. It's just what it is. So,
I mean, and there are worse things than, you know, being swept by the Dodgers. They're not the first team this season. They won't be the last, most certainly. And that might include some playoff teams in the actual playoffs that get swept as well. So, but thankfully, the Royals won't have to play the Dodgers again, right? Until
the World Series.
Yeah, until the World Series, of course. So,
fine with that.
Yeah, and in addition to kind of, I guess you could kind of say pour a little salt into the wound of I wouldn't say limp to the finish, because overall, like, the last 20 games going into the All-Star break were very good for the Royals. But, you know, getting swept in the last series, never a good feeling as you go into a break. But in addition to that, since the last time we recorded, we've also heard some news about Nate Karns, who we were talking about possibly coming back. And, you know, we had expressed some concerns on the show about whether or not he would come back since he got bumped to the 60-day DL. And then we find out now that he will be yet another candidate for the newest trend for baseball players, which is the thoracic outlet syndrome surgery that we talked about. We talked about last year. Luke Kochhaver had it. Kyle Zimmer had it. Chris Young had it a few years before that. So it's kind of the – it's one of those things where, you know, it's not something that was just kind of always there and then all of a sudden people started recognizing it. Like, it's legitimately a new procedure that they've kind of discovered, and so that's why it's a little bit more prevalent. Now they can actually diagnose it with a way to treat it. So, you know, hopefully that's a good thing for the future of Nate Karns, but for the future of this team in 2017 – it doesn't really help the Royals out that much. Matter of fact, it hurts them knowing that I'm pretty sure they were kind of planning on getting him back before they found out about this. I don't know how long they've known. But unfortunately, he's out for the season now. And so that fifth spot there, it's wide open essentially as to who they're going to get. So you've got a couple, or who they're going to get to fill the spot, I should say, and they've got a couple options, none of which are all that appealing based on performance this year. When you look at, you know, Eric Skoglund, who, yeah, he had the great debut but struggled since. Jake Junis, who, you know, hasn't looked all that impressive, has looked, you know, okay. And I have, to be clear, I have faith myself that those two will end up being major league caliber pitchers someday, but I don't know that it'll be this year, and it doesn't really help this team that much if they're not. And in addition to Carnes being in there, Matt Strom on the what was the shoot?
He just had ACL surgery, or knee ligament surgery. I don't know if it was the ACL, but that finishes his season. So
yes, so he's gone as well.
Yeah.
So he would have been a candidate for that fifth spot also, but now he's gone, and they lose him out of the bullpen as well. So the Royals are in a spot here where
it's a little rough.
They did well enough to bring themselves back into contention. They are three games back of the Cleveland Indians for first place in the division. They're a half game back of the Minnesota Twins, and they are 1.5 games back of the wild card. So they are still absolutely very much in the race here. And, you know, I mean, three games to win to lead the division, I mean, that could be a good week for you and a bad week for Cleveland, and next thing you know, there it is. So they're certainly in it, and the Royals should be going for it, absolutely, with all the free agents they have. So the question becomes, what are they going to do with that, knowing, okay, we're in contention now, we can't lose this momentum, we have to keep rolling for it. How do we do this? What do we do from here? They need a starting pitcher. They need another relief pitcher. There's been some rumors that they've been in the market for a second baseman and possibly an outfielder as well. So we've got some – they've got some targets, and a question of what do they have in the tank in terms of prospects, in terms of players they want to trade that are available for trade that they could move in order to bring a piece back that can help the team this year. I mean, when you look at this – you know, we've talked about Mondesi before, and it seems like in years past he's been essentially untouchable. But I don't know now. I mean, the Royals are all in on this, and they probably should be. So, you know, what do you think the best options for when the Royals looking for, you know, as we approach this trade deadline, looking to something to bolster these the pitching staff and possibly even add some more firepower to the lineup?
You know, I think starting pitcher is definitely going to be the focus. It might also be the spot where there's the most, you know, the most options that they could go with. It is going to be tough because the Royals don't really have that marquee kind of prospect. They don't have a greatly deep system. They have kind of this weird split where some of the guys that you feel are kind of developed are the Ryan O'Hearns and the, you know, when healthy, the Hunter Dozers, the, you know, maybe a resurgent Bubba Starling, guys who are like AAA guys who you could probably pull up to the big leagues right now, and maybe they'd be around replacement level, you know. And then other than that, you know, your guys like Khalil Lee are just down in A-ball. You know, a lot of the draft picks are still bouncing around in the rookie leagues and the Arizona League and stuff like that. So they don't have really this big deep system that they can deal from that they had in like 2015, where they were able to ship off a bunch of arms and get big names back. So I don't know, but I would say that starter's definitely the top priority. Otherwise, Travis Wood's going to be starting more games, and while he has pitched better over the last month or so, it's still not an appealing thought to have him as a starter. Especially when you're trying to make every week count. You know, you're in that position now where, you know, you got 4 weeks in August, 4 weeks in September, and 2 weeks here in July, once the season starts back up on Friday. You know, that's just not a lot of time, really, when it comes down to it. So if the Royals can get somebody who can go every fifth day, and again, nothing against, like, the Junises and Skoglins and Luke Farrells, but those guys just aren't quite there yet for what the Royals are going to be needing out of that spot. When it was May and you're just, let's see what happens, sure. See if those guys can maybe break out and something works. But they've all been pretty inconsistent. So the starter's definitely the number one thing that they would need. I think they've got to try to find some way to maneuver themselves into getting a better DH situation, because, you know, I talked myself into Brandon Moss based on, you know, hey, he's got some plate patience, he has legit you know, big time power when he makes contact. Figured that maybe his slump at the end of last year was just the ankle injury that he suffered. But he's really been pretty bad this year, with the exception of maybe that Twins series, that four-game series against the Twins, and about a week somewhere in May. Other than that, he's really been pretty consistently bad. And, you know, for someone like him who really can't play anywhere else except DH, I mean, you could put him in the outfield, but the Royals have clearly shown that they don't want to. I don't think they've played him in the outfield since, like, the second week of April. Because why would you try? So that's got to happen. And then Jorge Soler is, you know, he came back and he got a couple hits once he got called back up. But, you know, since he's like on, I don't know, for 13 stretch and he's
hitting 159. When you say a couple, you literally mean a couple.
Yeah. It's just, you know, neither of those guys are really doing that much. So, you know, the Royals need to figure something out. You know, they've been able to see a little more production from Alex Gordon and Alcides Escobar, and that's really helped them through June. Whit Merrifield hasn't really slumped much. He had a little dip after his 20-game hitting streak, but he kind of adjusted back. Jorge Bonifacio right now is probably the one who's kind of fighting it the most right now, and I think that's another instance of a rookie who just needs to adjust to what the league's doing to him now. You know, because otherwise you've got Perez, you've got Lorenzo Cain, you've got Eric Hosmer, you've got Mike Moustakas, and all of those guys are really hitting well. So you've definitely got the pieces that if the Gordons and the Escobars can hit well and Merrifield can be steady, you know, you just need maybe one more piece to shore it up and make it a 7-deep lineup with maybe a little bit of upside in that 8 and 9 spot. And, you know, I don't know how the Royals might do that. I mean, there are certainly names out there. Dave Lesky has covered some of those on BP Kansas City. It might even be something as simple as finding a way to get Whit Merrifield into right field and somebody playing second base, whether that's Ramon Torres, who, you know, doesn't have a lot of pop but could play there probably, or if that means you go out and trade for somebody, you know, it doesn't have to be a game breaker. You know, the trade values this time of year are really weird.
D Gordon is the name that I've seen mentioned recently.
Yeah, and he's very Royals. He's a contact,
he's very,
speed, and defense
very
guy.
Royals, yes.
Son of Tom Gordon, so, you know.
Come on home.
That, I guess. but, I don't know. I don't know what they're going to end up doing there. So I don't know that I expect big upgrades, but there might be a couple of small deals that they can maybe put together. But right now, yeah, starting pitcher is number one priority. The rest I think they can figure out and piece together somehow. But I think they really are going to need a fifth starter to go along, and just for consistency's sake. You know, they don't have to go out and try to trade for Jose Quintana. You know, if they can get somebody like Edinson Volquez-ish type, that would be okay. Just someone who can take the ball every fifth day, give you a professional 6 innings, you know, keep you in a game. Maybe they give up 3 runs, but that's it. You know, that's
just like Nathan Carnes.
Yeah, I mean, that's just what they kind of need. And if they don't have Carnes, well, they've got to piece it together somehow. And, you know, We what we've seen so far just really is not consistent enough to kind of keep them in there when you consider that that's somebody who's going to have to start, you know, 15, 18 games or something by the end of the year. So you really want to find somebody who can actually hold down that spot. And, you know, there are plenty of veterans out there. We'll see if the Royals have the pieces to go get them. You know, it might just be something where they have to agree to take on payroll so that they don't have to give up as big of a prospect, because they just don't have a lot of prospect capital to work with either. So it's going to be interesting these next 2-3 weeks to see how the Royals maneuver that with, you know, not a lot of payroll space and not a lot of prospects to deal from, and 2-3 gaps to fill on their roster. So, we'll see. We'll see how the Dayton Moore, I don't know, magic tricks work.
Yes, He's made some pretty good in-season trades before, and they've worked out for him. He's made some, you know, if for all the criticism that Dayton Moore took in the early years of his tenure, and for, you know, just everything over the last 5 years or so, he's made some really good trades. He's made some bad ones, but he's made more good ones than bad. And if there's one area that he's excelled at, it's been, you know, making pretty solid free non-marquee free agent signings and making some decent trades. So, you know, hopefully that will continue, and he'll make some, he'll find a way to shift some pieces and, you know, keep the players like Mondesi and O'Hearn and those guys down at the minors that, you know, are kind of on the cusp for the next couple of years that might be coming up, and can find a way to keep those guys but still get some players in that can help this team. But it'll be about 3 weeks and we'll find out. So look forward to that. And with that, I think we're going to dive right in. You know what? We'll take a quick break here just to break it up. We'll give you a few minutes, and then we will come back. And if you remember, if you've been listening to this show this whole season, which of course you have, why wouldn't you?
Sure.
But you will remember that Mike and I at the beginning of the season made some bold predictions for this team and what would happen. So obviously the season's not over yet, so there's still a long way to go, but we're going to talk about those bold predictions, and we're going to look where we are and see where we're tracking throughout this for how close we might be for the rest of the season. So stick with us. We'll talk about that when we come back, and we'll see you on the other side.
The Kansas City Baseball Vault will be right back after these messages.
Brand new Royal Stadium in Kansas City's Harry S. Truman Sports Complex is the attractive setting for this year's game. Hosting this all-star occasion are Mr. and Mrs. Ewing Kaufman. And with a stadium record crowd of almost 41,000 streaming in, everything certainly is up to date in Kansas City.
The Vault.
Hey, Troy, what are you doing this weekend?
I'm going to grab a beer somewhere. What do you have in mind?
I heard about this awesome new bar downtown. It's called Rage. The waitresses have a contest to see who has the most piercing.
Oh, man, that's not really my scene.
Well, there's another bar close by called Spit Cup. Check it out. The bartenders wear chaps, and every hour they shoot a guy.
No, seriously, I just want a bar where I can sit down and watch the game.
Okay, I've got just the place. It's called Lilac. You sit on pillows, drink from eucalyptus leaves.
No, Ned, but I just want a place where I can get a cheap drink and watch the football game.
Okay, I got it. This place, it's got a TV. It's called 816.
Let me just toast it. Yep.
All their drinks come in NBA hats.
Man, I just want a place like Kelly's.
Oh, you mean Kelly's Westport Inn? No, they've got all the basketball and bowl game. They've even got a heated roof. The view is really nice, too, if you know what I'm saying. Why didn't you just say you wanted to go to Kelly's?
Kelly's Westport Inn, 500 Westport Road. Make it your place to go any time of the week.
And welcome back to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, a Baseball Prospectus affiliate. Folks, we talked a little bit about some news in the first half, so now we're going to hit you with the mid-season review of our early season predictions. So if you remember listening to our preseason prediction show, we had quite a few different categories of things that we thought were kind of interesting. We set some baselines for them, what the team home run total would be, what a home run total for a particular player would be, et cetera. And then we both, Mike and I, picked over-unders. And then both of us made two quote-unquote bold predictions. So we're going to look at those and see where we stand on those as we hit mid-season. So
you get to see how wrong we are.
Yes, exactly.
Or how right in a couple of cases.
So first, we'll start with Eric Hosmer's ground ball rate. Now, this was a big point of contention in the offseason. Even though he had his most home runs ever last year at 25, he still had a 58, almost 59% ground ball rate last year, which is just patently absurd for a Major League Baseball player.
It is Tony Pena Jr. territory.
Yes, it's really – but somehow, you know, he still had himself a solid season last year. So we said it – we gave him the benefit of the doubt that he would improve a tad and put it at 55%. Currently – he is, if you can believe this, at 54%. So he's improved a little bit, but still well above the average for Major League Baseball. So, Mike, tell us how you and I went on this. I remember how I went, but
yeah,
I went over, didn't I?
You went over. You weren't sure that he was going to make the adjustments to it. I went under. I thought that he, you know, being a contract year, he would try to find whatever way he could to be much more productive. And he's technically under, yes.
So you're winning at midseason.
I'm getting that. But at the same time, 54 is it's still, he was at 53% coming into the season for his career. So he's still higher than his career rate in that situation. So, you know, it just shows that a lot of those adjustments just haven't happened. Now, April, he basically hit like 90% on the ground. Not really, but sure felt like that. So
yeah,
that's going to skew it a lot. They were all the second, and they were all in big moments when we all knew it was coming. So I don't know.
Now,
I mean,
at one point, I made a fake Eric Hosmer jersey and changed his number to 43.
I mean, it's
centered around as a little joke, but
it was accurate. So,
it was.
You know, I don't know. I mean, I would still probably say under right now for the rest of the year, but you know, it's just, this is just going to be a tendency. This is just part of who he is.
He's as good or better than where he's currently been at.
Yeah. I mean, I would say he still ends the year under 55, but I can't say that he's going to finish dramatically under it. Like, he's not going to hit 40% ground balls in the second half. He's probably going to hit around 53% in the second half because that's just who he is. Fortunately, he's strong enough that when he does get some loft on it, it usually carries out. So that's to his benefit. And, you know, there are also times where if he does hit it on the ground, he's hitting it hard and he's hitting it through the infield, and they basically have to play him straight up in the infield and outfield. So that's a positive in that, you know, yes, he does hit it on the ground a lot, but his other tendencies are pretty spread out. So, you know, it hasn't affected his production this season, but it is one of those kind of, it's kind of an anchor on him. You know, he's not as good as he can be hitting the ground ball on the ground 54% of the time. Still having a great year, but it could be better. So that's definitely a blemish on him. But yeah, I would still say he's going to end up going under it by the end of the year. It's just, you know, it's just who he is, though. It's not going to be dramatic. It's not going to be crazy. It's not going to be revolutionary. It's just going to be, oh, there's Eric Hosmer. He's hitting the ball on the ground some more. So
yeah, and so you're in the lead there, but it's still very much up in the air. And essentially, really, I mean, when you talk about how bad he was in April. Excuse me. Sorry. I'm going to, let's hold on a second. We're going to pull up his splits and see what his ground ball rate actually was in April. Let's see here because I am quite curious actually. So it was 60.8% in April. Okay, it was 53.8% in May, 50.6% in June, and 46.9% in July. So that is really good improvement month over month. And I hadn't looked at this until just now. I had only looked at the overall number to see where he was relative to our baseline. But so essentially, if he just doesn't repeat March and April, then he's probably going to be under. We were kind of railing on him that first month, and it was totally deserved in terms of how Eric Hosmer was playing. But you know, he's really righted the ship quite a bit, and he's now probably the best pure hitter on the team right now, even though the home run numbers aren't huge. He's definitely he's really locked in right now. And, you know, we know how Hosmer goes, you know, with the big slumps and the big hot streaks and everything. So hopefully the All-Star break didn't come at exactly the wrong time for him and kind of derail what he had going. Hopefully he can just pick up right where he left off when he came back in and keep it rolling, because he's having a really good season. And he's at where is home runs at? He has, was it 12? 12 on the year?
12 yep. Was off Kershaw, of all folks.
Oh. Of all folks. So
he should be able to get to 20.
Yeah, so I mean, if he has a season shot. Right now, he's at 318, 374, which would be a career high on-base percentage for him. So if he hits, you know, 320, 370, 490 as a slash line with 20 home runs, and so he's got 42 RBIs, so probably 90 RBIs. I mean, that's about as, you know, I'm not going to say as good a season as you could ask for, but we had these hopes that Hosmer would be kind of like 35 home run type hitter guy. We learned after the first few years it's not necessarily who he is. So if that's what his line ends up being, I think that's kind of your best case for Hosmer, a guy who's going to give you a lot of hits. He's going to get on base quite a bit. He was always regarded as a good on base guy coming up in the minors, and it had been kind of off and on in his career that we'd seen that, but it's been really encouraging. So hopefully if he gets that ground ball rate down, I mean, and it's not as though, you know, he's trading those ground balls in for pop flies or for strikeouts or something like that. You know, he is his line drive rate, in contrast to his ground ball rate, was 21% in March, April, and increased to 24, 26, and then 28% as of July, which is
pretty good.
Above, yeah, which is above the league average. So, pretty good for him, you know. Not for him, pretty good in general. So hopefully, you know, if he those line drive numbers keep increasing, the ground balls keep decreasing, you know, it's possible that he has a bigger second half home run wise, which I think is actually somewhat of a trend for him than he did first half. And who knows? Maybe he hits 13 home runs in the next 75 games. That wouldn't even be that crazy, really.
Mm-hmm.
And then he hits 25 home runs, and the season looks, you know, then and if he still has the same slash line, then all of a sudden things look really different. And I don't know what it is about that 25 number. Maybe it's that it's halfway to 50. Maybe it's, I don't know, but it, you know, 25 feels better than 20. And yeah, obviously it's five more, so it should, but like, it's not that big of a difference.
It feels like a bigger step though.
Yeah. Like if you went 55 versus 50, you'd be like, okay, well both are obscenely good. So it doesn't really, you know, five home runs isn't that much better in that context. You know what I mean? Or
it's like going 15 to 20. That's,
yeah, 10,
that's
five
a different tier. Really?
Yeah, like 5 home runs to 10 home runs doesn't really mean that much to me. But yeah, 15 to 20, then you start a 20 or 20 home run guy, and then 20 to 25, then all of a sudden 30's in range if you just had a couple more. You know, maybe if he didn't play in Kauffman, he hits 30, just like last year. So who knows? We'll see. But right now, you got the inside track on that one. Next one we're going to hit is the team leader in home runs. Okay, so our baseline for this was 25, which is interesting that we're talking about that kind of a nice segue in there. But so I went low on this one, and this is the only one that we have that is definitively done.
Yeah.
I am out, and I have lost this this prediction, because Mike Moustakas at the break, as we all know, has 25 home runs. And
yeah. In your defense, though, when I went back to re-listen to that episode, you did say there were a lot of guys who were capable of hitting 20. So it's not like you thought that nobody was going to hit homers. It's just that, you know, a specific player hitting 25 seemed out of whack. It just happened that Mike Moustakas has had, you know, one of the best, well, the best power hitting first half in Royals history. So
yes,
it took an historic effort for your prediction to be wrong.
There we go. But it is in fact wrong.
It is quite wrong. Yes,
and you know, this is a good point to kind of interject. We didn't really talk about Mike Moustakas's home run derby appearance. That was really cool that he's first time I can recall seeing. I mean, I think we said Danny Tartable was the last one in 91.
Yeah, I was in 91, and I tried to find footage of it. All I saw was Cal Ripken taking a couple swings, and that was it.
And, I mean, I was 6 years old, so I had no idea what the hell was going on. But so that's the first time in my life I'd seen somebody in the Home Run Derby, and pretty cool. Or somebody, I should say, someone from the Royals in the Home Run Derby, because I've seen plenty of other players. And he played interdivision rival Miguel Sano, and they had quite a battle. Sano started off the round hitting 11 home runs, and Moose fouled just one short with 10 home runs. But the way they've introduced the timer – I think it was last year, the year before, the first year they did that with
last
the timer.
Last year, maybe 2 years ago.
Yeah,
I don't
pretty recently.
Exactly, but it's recent, yeah.
And I think it's added quite an actual pretty good element, you know, because before it was kind of a leisurely thing where just however long people are going, but it added some tension to it. It made it kind of, you know, it reminds me of, I don't know if you ever played like triple play baseball or MVP back in the day in like early 2000s, you know, where they had. The Home Run Derby you could play on split screen. Like in college, me and my buddies would
play.
That was a lot of fun. And, you know, the game would do it by like tracking distance. So you just, you know, even if you didn't hit a home run, it didn't matter. But anyway, that it kind of felt like that almost where, you know, obviously it wasn't split screen because they weren't going at the same time, but it was still fun. And, you know, it's now that I mentioned that, it's certainly possible that that's the evolution of the Home Run Derby is two of them going at the same time.
Maybe.
I don't know how you would make that work, but that if things truly get really bad and they really need people to check in, that might be a way to get it done. But that was just kind of an aside, just to give some mention there. He only made it the one round, but
yeah, he hit a lot of pop-ups and that really sucked a lot of the time out. So. And that's not really his kind of element anyway. I think like Sal or even Hosmer, strangely enough, would be a better fit for that because they've got more of those like distance homers, and Moose is a lot more. Well, and like five of them were just laser line drives.
Yeah. And he had a little bit of a stretch. I think it was like five or six in a row, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. He kind of got his groove in there, but, you know, he didn't reach the distance bonus that they were giving. And that was ultimately what sunk him. But yeah, I mean, it's not like anybody was going to beat, you know, Aaron Judge, who was amazing.
Yes. And
it's crazy.
And if you're of the mindset that the Home Run Derby destroys people's swings and, you know, craters the rest of their season, as far as home runs are concerned, then best case scenario for you in that context is if Moose loses in the first round. So
yeah,
if there's any positive, I suppose that would be it, but that was a lot of fun. I, you know, normally I watch the Home Run Derby and it's just kind of like, oh yeah, you know, well, this is somewhat entertaining. And
at a certain point it's like, oh cool, they hit it into the upper deck again.
Yeah. And,
but when they're hitting it three-fourths of the way up the back wall.
Yeah. That's nuts. And
yeah, it was
seeing Moose in it and adding the timer and everything, it made it really fun. And I had a really good time watching it. So that was cool. But just as an aside to our home run discussion, so Mike wins that one. I lose horribly.
Yeah.
Hopefully horribly, as in Moose hits way more than 25. But
right.
Next, we'll have we'll talk about Danny Duffy. So the baseline we set for Duffy was a 3.5 ERA. So currently, Danny Duffy sits at 3.76, and he came back from injury right before the All-Star break. And before his last start, his ERA was 3.49. So, you know, because he missed so much time, he's only got, let's see, 81 innings pitched. So he's got, you know, there can be some pretty big swings left in the year based on, you know, how as the more innings go along. So it's a somewhat small sample size. But, you know, the 3.5 is very much in play for him. And I think I said over, but I think I essentially said 3.76. Not in exact terms, but that I said it would be over, but still under four. And then you went under?
I went under, yeah. I kind of felt it would be around like 3.25-ish. kind of in there. Not that he'd be like Cy Young territory, so I wanted to stay somewhat realistic, but I think he can still get under that. I mean, you know, we've seen two starts from him since he came back from surgery, or not surgery, from the DL. He didn't have surgery that I know of. So I think he's in good shape to kind of get back on track in the second half. He's always been in pretty good shape, so I think he's going to be fine. And, you know, we'll see how he goes. He struck out a lot of guys against the Dodgers, so that bodes well. And, you know, other than a couple of home runs by all-star Justin Turner, you know, he had a pretty okay start. So, you know, I feel pretty good about him in the second half.
Yeah, I would agree. I think it's very much in play. And I'm looking forward to him getting there, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
So next we'll look at Lorenzo Cain. So the baseline there was that Lorenzo Cain had 115 games played on the season. And so far, of the 87 games, Lorenzo Cain has played 84, which is to say he hasn't had any injury issues, knock on wood. He has only, you know, missed a couple of games just for getting days off and such. So right now, as far as that, I think we're looking pretty good. I think we both went over on that one, didn't we?
We did. We both went over. We're pacing pretty well. And I think we added the caveat. I don't have it in my notes, but just listening to the episode again, we kind of added the wrinkle. Would it be 115 as a Royal or overall? And we leaned towards, well, as a Royal, because there was always, you know, the potential that the Royals might sell guys off. That's not going to be the case now.
No.
So he's definitely going to get to that mark, you know, barring injury, as a Royal. So we're both going to end up being over on that, I'm pretty sure.
Yes. And
unless he just retires suddenly, I guess that's also
certainly a possibility.
Not zero chance, but
in the realm of things that could happen.
I have a hunch that's probably not going to happen.
No. And he's having a pretty solid season. You know, he's got
11
home runs, so 20 is within. He's never hit 20 in his career, but it's within range for him as well, just as it is for Hosmer. And he is walking at a clip well above his career rate, in relative terms, of course. But and he's got a pretty good slash line. He's hitting .274, .346, .435. He's having a good season so far. You know, he's not quite that MVP season that he had a couple of years ago, but it's MVP caliber season he had a couple of years ago. But still really good, and absolutely nothing you can complain about from what he's given you so far this season.
Yep.
At least for me.
Might end up with a gold glove even, you know, if things fall right.
The elusive gold glove.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy that he hasn't won at least one. But
I know, right?
Maybe this will be the year.
This could pop.
Maybe.
Ding one. We talked about Kelvin Herrera, and we set the over-under on 35 saves. And I believe I went over on this. What did you...
We both went over.
Both went over.
Yeah.
So currently he's at 19. So you would say he'd be tracking towards, you know, that's still in play, and he is. But at the same time, he's got a 4.5 ERA, and he's really had just quite a poor season, to be honest. So it's he's kind of weird this year. I don't really know what to make of what he's doing. His pitch selection has been weird. His pitches, metrically, they don't look a ton different, but they appear to be less effective. I don't really know what's going on with Kelvin Herrera. I mean, have you been able to kind of glean anything from what you've seen or heard? I don't know that I've really heard much about people having been able to pinpoint any particular issue with him.
The main thing that I've noticed through all of it is that his slider was not nearly as sharp as it had been, and he'd been leaving it over the middle of the plate, and that's where a lot of those home runs through, like, June 8th were happening. You know, so he's mostly scrapped that. You know, he still throws it to kind of show it, but he's not using it nearly as much. He's throwing the fastball more, and that's kind of the main adjustment that he can go with. You know, it still kind of puts him in a position where, you know, he's still giving up some runs here and there. So it's not a complete fix, but he did have a good little rebound once he stopped going to the sliders often. You know, if he's just a two-pitch pitcher and just shows the slider, he can get away with that. But so far, I still feel pretty confident in him. You know, some of his worst outings are ones where he wasn't in for a save. You know, and not that there's, you know, there's always talk about, okay, well, it's not a save. You can't get the adrenaline up. But, I mean, it's a big league pitcher. That doesn't carry a lot of weight for me. I think they're in there. They're going to try to give it their all in every game they can. I think it just ends up being one of those situations where it's just a weird circumstance. He gives up some runs. So, you know, despite those struggles and despite the Royals winning just 7 games in April, he's in pretty good shape save-wise, you know, when you really think about it, because how many opportunities did he have to even get a save in the first month of the season? So I would say that he's still going to be able to get there, especially if the Royals are able to add a bat or maybe they get a better pitcher so they have more games that they can hand off to the bullpen. So he may have a lot more save opportunities in the second half if the Royals stay in contention, which, you know, he only needs 16 out of their 75 games. So I think he's got pretty good odds, but this is one where it might be pretty close too. Especially if the Royals kind of fade towards the end of the year.
Yeah. I do think it'll still be in play, and I think, you know, he's you kind of say it's weird because he hasn't had, like, a sort of progression towards improvement so much as he's had just kind of spikes. And like you mentioned, a lot of his bad appearances have been when, you know, the game wasn't on the line, for whatever that's worth. So hopefully, you know, as we go towards the second, it's definitely in play. I think he'll probably get pretty close if he doesn't get it. So I think I'm at like a 60% confidence level on that. You know, there's the possibility that they get caught in a bad streak here sometime in August and they just team gets deflated and they just kind of tank it for the rest of the season, essentially, which that would be unfortunate, but that's kind of the only scenario I see where he wouldn't make it. But hopefully it's not 35 saves of 4.5 ERA. Hopefully he rides the ship quite a bit. And
right. Really, the only ERA that ends up mattering from now is from now. You know, it's like,
right, exactly.
What he's done is done. He can't improve upon what has already happened. He can just go out and be better the rest of the way. So, you know, I think he can do that. But I've always been a Herrera fan too. So, you know, I have a bias.
Yes, absolutely.
I want him to do well because I have always liked Kelvin Herrera. So,
same. So we'll see. Hopefully he does. Next, we'll shift to another reliever here coming out of the bullpen, Joaquin Soria. So bad season. You know, we defended him, and then eventually it got to the point where it was so bad we just couldn't do it
just
anymore.
Can't do
we
it.
You know what? It's over. It's a bad season for him. What are you going to do? But this season so far, quite a bit better than it was last year, specifically the start of the season. He's got close to a career high in strikeouts, doing, you know, striking out a lot of batters, more than the last few years. And his ERA right now is at 3.4. So I believe for the 4.0 ERA, I chose under. I can't recall what you under as well.
We were both under. You know, even with all his issues last year, he still finished with, I think, a 4.03 ERA. Mm-hmm. So this question was really, would he be better than last year? And he has been. So it seems pretty straightforward to me. He's throwing harder. He's hit 94, 95 a couple times. And for a guy who we've seen plenty of, where he's throwing usually about 92, that's kind of surprising. I think that helps his strikeout rate. So if he can keep missing bats, then you won't see the weird stuff that, you know, the 7 hopper that bounces off 8 rocks and lands in the outfield that he ran into last year a bunch of times that really kind of derailed him. He always got the worst bounces last year. Not that, you know, that means that's why he was bad, but he did run into a lot of that weird stuff. So this year that stuff has been absent, and he's been pitching a lot better. So I'm still tracking. I'm not really – I don't think I've changed my mind on any of these. I think he's still going to be better than he was last year, which is going to be under at the end of the year.
Yep, I think so. I think I agree with everything you said. I think he's doing pretty well. I'm you know, happy for him, and, you know, it's not – I guess you could kind of say that as an eighth inning guy, you'd want an ERA a little bit lower than 3.41. But especially given, you know, what we had last year, I'm not going to be all that concerned. Or I'm not going to nitpick too hard on that. And I definitely think I can't see him blowing up really in a bad way for the rest of the season. So hopefully we're both right on that one. Next, we had Mike Moustakas with a 3.0 WARP, wins above replacement player. And so far right now, he's at a 1.1. So it's – given the season he's had, if he's already not halfway there, the prospects of him reaching that 3.0 are not looking so great right now.
Yeah. Yeah, he's not walking nearly as much this year. He's a little more aggressive. That might be what's fueling the power surge. I mean, he's got – what, a 560 slugging percentage, 25 homers. You know, I mean, that's an okay trade-off, you know, when he's producing in that kind of a way. But I think a big part of this is just his defense hasn't been as good as we've gotten used to it. You know, he's generally been average to above average, and right now he's basically average and maybe slightly below. That might just be because he had major knee surgery last year. You know, and the range isn't there. If his step isn't as quick, if his range is, you know, a foot or two short, he's not going to get to as many, you know, balls that are hit his way. He doesn't have as many opportunities to create outs and add that defensive value. So, you know, it makes sense. And I think you're right. If he's at 1.1 now, it's going to be really tough. I don't know how many homers he would have to hit to add 1.9 in 75 games. That's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, that would be really impressive if he could.
Yeah, I mean, Fangraphs has him at 1.7 WAR. Baseball Reference has him at 1.3. So they're kind of in the same ballpark. They're all kind of in that same, well, probably not 3 territory as well. So I think any way you kind of look at it, he's probably not going to get there. But at the same time, you know, some of the defensive and base running things are the harder things to quantify as well in that kind of thing. So I think people are just going to have to be satisfied with him probably hitting 40 homers this year. Sorry.
Yeah. Sorry. You're just going to have to take that, and you're going to have to like it, Royals fans.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that ends up, but I'm guessing we'll probably be both wrong on that one. Next, yeah, we have Raul Mondesi. And we had him at 450 plate appearances. I think we both went over. I think I begrudgingly did, and I think you went over as well. Is that right?
I went under. I was still not sold, but I was very prepared to be incorrect. So I hedged a little bit. You were very clearly over, but, you know.
Only because I felt the Royals would not pull the trigger on sending him down if he was struggling. And
yeah,
as it played out, I was absolutely wrong, and so far you are going to be right. I'm sure. I don't think it's even possible at this point for him to get. He's at 49.
Yeah,
so he'd have to get 401 plate appearances in 75 games, and he's not even on the 25 or the major league roster right now. So
yeah, that'd be about 5.5.
Yeah, so
plate appearances a game.
So that's
not
going
to have to score about 6.5 runs a game to do that.
That, hey, if that does happen, that's only
I'm fine with it, yeah.
Royals probably go win 60 games out of those 75 if that's how they do it.
Yeah.
But
to Mondesi's credit, he is crushing AAA right now.
Yeah.
So he's playing really well down there. It's just he's, you know.
Yeah, and if the Royals are smart, they won't get blinded by how well he's doing, and they'll keep him down there.
Yeah,
let him finish out the season.
Let him develop it.
Let the man have some success, and
yeah,
get his confidence back, and then start next year with the team when you really need him. because you're going to lose some players. So that will be – so you were right on that one, and I was wrong. The next one, not really much talking about. It's the second half OPS for Salvador Perez that we set it at 675. You can't even really predict second half based on first half, especially for Sal. So we'll leave that till our end of the season review.
Yeah. I would note that the Royals have given him more starts at DH this year than in other years. He's averaged 77 starts at catcher over the 2014 through 2016 seasons. This year he's made 67 starts at catcher and 10 at DH. So maybe that will help him stay fresher in the second half. We both went under for that. I would say he can probably do over, but that's probably just because I'm optimistic, because the Royals are still within reach of some playoff spots. So by the time October rolls around, if he is under that 675, I won't be surprised either. So
yeah,
kind of where we're at.
Indeed. Our next one, Ian Kennedy, we had it 190 innings pitched, and I think – now this one I can't even recall which way we both went on this.
We both went over.
Over, okay.
Yeah, mostly because of track record and the fact that he's generally been a guy who's been able to go over that. But we also didn't foresee he got injured early in the season, and he's had some shorter outings here and there too. He's had some really good ones. He's finally kind of gotten it back. Like his first three starts when he came back off the DL, he wasn't very sharp at all. No. But he also didn't take any rehab starts. So they just kind of sat him for a week and a half and then put him back out there. And, you know, it's no surprise that he got shelled. So he's been pitching a lot better lately. He still has a ways to go. I guess he could maybe cover 103 over the rest of the year, but
yeah, I think it's technically possible.
Yeah, I would.
It's a tall order.
I would shift from over to under, though, today. If I can revise.
But it's not going to be under by a ton. Your 175 to 180 is probably about where, assuming he stays healthy for the rest of the year.
Yeah.
I think that's probably pretty.
Yeah, he could add 85 innings pretty easily.
So
and be in 172. So.
Yeah, so I think he'll be close, but not quite there.
Yeah.
And then the final one we had was Balboni about the record falling, right? And
yep.
I obviously, since I didn't imagine any player would hit it more than 25, I obviously said it would not fall this year.
Right.
But I believe you said it was going to fall?
Did
you
say? I said under. I was still under. Until I see it happen, I don't believe it can happen. That being said, it's totally going to happen.
This is, don't crush my dreams, baseball gods. It could be the year. And especially now, you know, if nothing else, if the Royals don't make the playoffs or maybe they falter in the second half, if nothing else, their surge in the first half has ensured Mike Moustakas will be a Royal for the rest of the season, so that this record can hopefully, fingers crossed, knock on wood, everything else can hopefully drop. So we'll see.
Yeah, it's
Moose is tracking very, very well right now. He's right. Well ahead of Balboni when
like
Balboni,
three homers in four games, I think, last week.
Yep, he's well ahead of where Balboni was. I think Balboni was like 16 at the break or something, and even Salvador Perez has an outside shot at it if he gets really hot. Because he's got 17 right now. So, I'm excited for that one.
Yeah, there was some discussion on Twitter about, you know, what was the last, like, milestone kind of thing that people were really counting down towards. And, I mean, like, magic numbers, you know, playoff races and stuff like that, those are obvious. But, I mean, for, like, personal milestones, like, I can't remember stuff where it's, like, the frenzy, like the closest thing that we could really come up with was George Brett going for 3,000.
Yeah,
where it was,
I mean,
like every day you're looking at it.
Montgomery had 300 saves. I mean, maybe. Was that after or before George Brett hit?
It was probably after, because Montgomery didn't really start as a closer until 89. So
okay, so yeah, it was
his heyday would have been that 92 to 96 kind of territory.
Yeah, okay.
And there were two strike years.
I knew it when I was a kid, but I couldn't remember exactly.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
even,
that's the only
even
other
then,
thing.
People can... don't show up going, oh, man, today's the day. You know,
yeah,
I
exactly,
think you pay
exactly.
attention, but it's like outfield seats are going to be expensive at Coffin when he gets to 34 because any given man. Day he could do it. And you want to be able to catch the ball. So I think that'll be really, really fun once he gets to that point. And he's 9 homers away from that.
I love it. And it's so – it's such a ridiculous record yeah. for a team record. And I love that, like, Royals and Royals fans are just totally embracing it. Like, there was a picture you tweeted at me after we talked about Balboni possibly following Moose. Was it Joel Goldberg when they were found him? Where did he – was when they – where was it?
Oh, the Balboni?
Yeah. Who took that picture?
I don't know who took the picture. It was Balboni was, I think, there scouting ahead of the Giants series.
Yeah. And, but anyway, somebody found him and you tweeted it to me like, oh, he is following Moose. Obviously not, but it was a funny little joke based on the conversation we had. So, that again, I love that it's being embraced for its absurdity and another, just kind of instance of the Royals fan base really having a lot of fun. So hopefully it ends this year. So now that we've talked about our over-unders, now we're gonna assess the bold predictions that we made. So first, why don't you go first? Why don't you go with your first one? Go with your Kyle Zimmer one, because that one is, yeah.
Because that one sucks.
we'll work our way up here.
Yeah, after so many years where you decided to latch onto the Kyle Zimmer bandwagon, I decided it was my turn, and I thought he would be able to get to 20 innings pitched in the majors, and so far he's at 0. So that's not great. I think he would still have a chance at this. But he's basically got to get called up in like 2 weeks and be with the team the rest of the way. I mean, he threw, you know, 9 innings in April, 9 innings in June in Omaha. You know, he did spend most of, you know, half of April and May where he was just out. He, you know, just shoulder problems and they just shut him down for a bit. Now he's back. He's pitching only about every third day or so. So they're not really doing a whole lot as far as getting him in back-to-back days. So that probably says that he's not very close to being ready to come up in the majors because, you know, those guys, you know, you're not going to try to pitch them 3 days in a row, but they have to be somewhat available to be able to go 3 days in a row. And if you're not even going 2 in a row, pretty iffy that he's going to get called up at any point. But, you know, when he has been pitching, he's pitched, you know, multiple innings, but all in relief. So it's not looking good for the prediction. I think he probably still gets up, but it's going to be really tough for him to get to 20 at this rate. If he doesn't have any right now, 20 and one half under his conditions, it's going to be tough. I'm going to have to just wear the loss on that one.
Yeah. I think it'll be tough, but it's certainly within the realm of possibility. I mean, if they call him up soon and, you know, and he gets, even if it's every third day or so, you know, that's still.
Yeah, if you're doing 2 innings a day, you only need 10 appearances for it. But
exactly. So
that's still tough to get through.
Yeah, we'll see. It's still certainly in play, but most of our 4 bold predictions, it is the most likely not to occur.
Yeah, none of our rookie pitcher X is going to pitch 20-some innings predictions.
They never turn out well for us.
They have not happened yet.
We need to stop.
Yeah.
We're, oh, man.
We say that, but I'm totally doing it next year with Josh Staumont. So
yeah, exactly. That'll be
to heck with it.
So next we'll go with one of mine that it's a slam dunk that's already happened. So I predicted that Jorge Soler would be optioned back down to AAA at some point during the season. I don't even know that even I predicted that it would happen as quickly as it did, but there we are. And he's having a terrible season. and Wade Davis was an all-star. So I still don't necessarily fault them for the trade, but
it doesn't look good.
Yeah, there's not much positive to say. I'm not happy to be right about this one.
Yeah, one thing that you said in the original episode was, well, if he's struggling and hitting .150 in May, they'll have to send him down. And yeah, he's hitting .159. So,
surely. Man.
There you go.
I don't know that I've ever been more right and more sad than I am.
But. Yeah, and it's a bummer because he hit well in Omaha and he was doing all the little things that you would ask of him. It's just, he just has struggled. You know,
yeah, and just... you start to wonder in these types of situations, is he just a 4A player, you know? But I guess we'll see. You know, hopefully he'll get things back on track. I mean, we had, you know, Alex Gordon for a long time. We wondered if he was just a 4A player and wasn't going to be able to get it together, mm-hmm. but he did. So,
yeah, it might just be one adjustment. It might just be one good week and kind of wakes him up. We'll have to see. I mean, the jury's still out on him. The Royals are going to have plenty of time to work with him, but we're looking at this year. So I want him hitting bombs. He's not
doing
that.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So next, your next prediction that you're in pretty good shape for.
Yeah, pretty good shape. I was. I predicted that the overall team record, not Balboni, but that the collective team record for home runs was going to fall. And it goes back to the stuff that, you know, we talked about in the over-unders, is that there are a lot of guys who are capable of hitting 20 homers. There's an outside shot at this, at a player hitting 36. So the Royals team record is 168 home runs in 1987. The Royals currently are sitting at 107 home runs on July 12th. So at that rate, they're hitting home runs, 1.23 home runs per game. That would project out to 92 over the final 75 games of the year, which would land them at 199 total home runs and thoroughly crushing that team home run record. So that might be something that they might have that whooped like in early September, late August. They might... Mike Moustakas' 37th home run might be home run 169 for the Royals. He might break both records with one swing.
Boom. How fantastic would that be?
That'd be pretty cool.
Oh, my Lord. That'd be really cool.
That would just be like fireworks for like 10 minutes. Just, all right, we finally did it.
Yeah.
Commemoration in the middle of the field.
Yes. Just they literally stopped the play. And
Didn't you see something about like Balboni on the big screen?
Yep.
To congratulate him? Yeah.
And then...
I want to see that. I just go for it. Just
I know, right?
Just it's a dumb it. Record, but do it, you know.
Like, I imagine the other team, like, why are we stopping the game?
37?
This dude hit 37 home runs. We're stopping the game.
I've done that four times.
Moustakas is doing high fives in the outfield. Everyone's like, what the hell is going on here?
Put him on a horse, run around the warning track, like Wade Boggs in the World Series.
Royals, please do this.
Yeah.
And then, so that one we're looking in pretty good shape. I'd be surprised if they didn't get it.
I don't know how you couldn't. You would basically have to hit a home run every other game only, which I guess they could do because they're still the Royals, but pretty tough.
Yeah, I mean, you only have to average 0.9 or so, 0.8, 0.9 home runs per game. So,
yeah.
For the Royals, I think that's rather easy to do.
Yeah.
So, finally, my final prediction. Now, this one I actually am pretty proud of, and I'm not right yet, but I'm looking pretty good. Right now, I predicted that Jason Vargas, or at the beginning of the season, I predicted that Jason Vargas would have an ERA under 4. And right now, Jason Vargas is having a career season with an ERA of 2.62. He's a All-Star legitimately for the first time in his career, and he was in the conversation to be starting the All-Star game based on the numbers he's put up. Now, he had his last start before the break was his worst of the season. But, you know, hopefully that's just anxious to get to the break and get to the All-Star game and got that out of his system. And you know, I don't know that he will end the season with a 2.62 ERA, but – and Dave Lesky's the master of always figuring this out. I know he has – he probably just goes to Baseball Reference or something and does it, but – figuring out how many runs a pitcher would have to give up over X number of innings in order to have an ERA below whatever.
Mm-hmm.
He always seems to be able to compute that rather quickly. I haven't done that at this point, but it's got to be a lot of runs.
That'd be a lot of runs.
Not very many innings to get him there. So I'm feeling pretty good about that now, and not only about whether or not my prediction comes true, but just the fact that that's one of the good ones where if it comes true, then things are doing well. And Vargas has been, I mean, right now he's got to be close to team MVP, or at least, you know, top three in your discussion,
yeah,
given how well he's performed and how, you know, when the everyone was struggling and the pitching staff was even struggling a little bit early in the season, you know, he was kind of the guiding force to get them back. So he's been invaluable to the team this year. And he pitched one scoreless inning in the All-Star game. So,
yeah, like for him, nine pitches.
Jason Vargas has always been just kind of a fun guy. He's never been a huge, you know, media or fan presence necessarily, but always seems just like a nice, chill guy. So really happy that, you know, at 30, was he 33, 34? 34.
How old is he? Should know that off
actually,
the top of my head.
Let's see. He's 34. He's 34.
Yeah, he's getting old for baseball.
Yeah, he's 34 and a half, actually. So
that half makes the difference.
It's
really
true. But, I mean, so for you to be 34 all those years in the majors for him and to finally get your first All-Star game and, you know, come close to starting it, that's pretty effing cool. So good for him, man. I'm really happy for Jason Vargas that he was able to have such a good first half of the season. I hope he keeps it going, because if he has an ERA below 3 for the whole season, then the Royals are going to be competing down for that playoff spot down to the wire, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's got his changeup is one of the better pitches in baseball right now. It's just, you know, he had the Tommy John surgery, and there's a good piece by Rustin Dodd in the Star talking about how, you know, once he was coming back, they recognized that his release point was a little lower. And so it just adds to what he can do with that changeup. And so, it, you know, it's making him clearly very effective. And,
absolutely.
You know, he's not someone who relies on velocity, obviously. So as long as he can continue to command things, he should be able to pitch pretty well. He's pitched pretty well his entire career with the Royals. So I think it's just something with the stadium, with a good defense behind him, and just his own ability and his own adjustments that, you know, he's been able to do it. And, you know, evidence is right there. He's having a great season. He should, yeah, I don't know how many runs that would be, but he should be able to land under 4. It'd be a complete implosion if he didn't.
Yes.
So I think you're good on that one. I think you're going to go 2-for-2 this year. And
hey, look at that.
And erase the Chris Medlin
oh, geez.
Debacle
last year,
of last year.
Last year was bad for me, so I deserve a good year.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's kind of it for our over-unders and bold predictions, but we do have one final item, kind of a bonus item, if you will. We got an email from Rob in SoCal who sent us a question, and he wanted to know that given the kind of mixed success of some of the young pitchers that we've seen this year, that there was he wants to know who's the one person that we're surprised at that we haven't seen, one of the young pitchers that the Royals have in the minors that we haven't seen yet, given all the turnover and the injuries and stuff, which is even when he sent this, it wasn't even, we didn't even know as much as we do now with Strom and Karn's injuries. So it makes it even kind of a more prevalent question. So, I mean, who does it surprise you that we haven't seen the most?
Well, if he'd asked this a month ago, I would have said Luke Farrell, because he's always been someone just seems like he's someone the Royals would have seen as one of those spot start call up kind of guys. Obviously he got called up for a spot start. And I guess I could still probably use him, but if I were to go with somebody who hasn't actually made it to the majors yet, I would say someone like, you know, like Sam Selman, who's been in the organization for a while, lefty, went to Vanderbilt, you know, he's been floating around for a long time. Crazy legs, yep. Kind of surprised he hasn't been up yet. I mean, he's been in the system since 2012. So, He's just been around for a long time. So I would figure he'd have gotten a shot. Maybe Miguel Almonte, if I were to go with the qualifier of, I would figure that I would have seen him pitch more than he has. He almost got that start that got rained out in Yankee Stadium. Other than that, he's pitched 2-3 innings, maybe. And for someone who, for a couple of years there, was among their top five pitching prospects, kind of surprised we haven't seen more of him. But that's kind of who I would lean. Maybe like a Christian Benford would be somebody else who's also been in that, okay, we need a spot starter today kind of territory. They might yank him up. Maybe he's kind of out of that range now. He hasn't pitched very well the last couple of years, so maybe they're not really keeping him in mind. But, those are kind of the guys that I've been thinking of, especially for where the Royals are. I don't know about the kind of prospect-y guys, Stamont and A.J. Puckett and some of those guys who are, college guys or have been around for a while. They haven't really come up yet. Maybe we'll see him. Maybe it'll be September. I don't know. But, yeah, I would lean for a guy like Stelman who's been around for a long time that I'm kind of surprised they haven't called up. He just seems like someone they would at least bring up to take a look at, especially when they get into those stretches where, you use everybody in the bullpen one game and then you have an extra inning game the next night. That's the kind of guy where you're like, okay, we're just going to pitch him because we have to have an arm. He would fit that role very well. So that I would go Stelman if I had to give just one name.
Yeah, and I agree with pretty much all the names you mentioned, and those are kind of the best options. I think for me, and you briefly touched on him, but Josh Stelman I think would be the one for me. He had a ton of buzz in spring training going into the year as a guy that might be able to come up late in the season to help the team. Now, recently, the whole season really in AAA, he's performed very poorly. He's 3-8 with a 6.28 ERA, and he walks almost 7.5 batters per 9 innings. Command has always been a huge issue for him, and it continues to be so. And he's actually been recently demoted down to AA. I think they like the pitching coach down there better for him to kind of help him develop a little bit more. But the reason I bring him up is because, sometimes if you're a reliever, you can get by with lackluster, because he's a starter in the minors and they want him to be a starter. But as a reliever, the Royals could bring him up to fill that role. And you can sometimes get by with some bad command if you can strike. He's still, even though he walks almost 7.5 guys, he strikes out 11 guys per 9 innings as well. Yep. So he's and got that nasty strikeout stuff really hard. And that's the kind of profile, that the Royals have somewhat liked. They obviously prefer much better control. But he's a guy that you didn't wonder if maybe the Royals could bring him up for a little bit and just kind of give him a shot and say, hey, we'll put him in a couple low-leverage situations and see how he does. And if he walks 7 guys in a row, then, hey, we know it's not the time.
Right.
But, he kind of reminds me of Jeremy Jeffress, who is the forgotten man in the Zach Greinke trade that the Royals got from the Brewers. And the Royals just dropped him after a couple of years, after getting him in that trade, because he just, wasn't where they needed him to be. And he wasn't, in terms of walks, he wasn't even as bad as Stelman, but he also wasn't as good of a pitcher, didn't have as high of a ceiling, I don't think. But he wound up turning into a decent pitcher. It took him a little while. Absolutely. He's 29 years old now, but last year, he had 27 saves in 2016 and a 2.33 ERA. And he's had
What was his walk rate?
Let's see. Make sure I'm looking. Yep, 2.79. So, he really set. But, his strikeout struggled a little bit, 6.52. I mean, that's not the pitcher that he was built to be.
Average.
He was pretty not spectacular. But, getting the job done. So, there's still hope for Josh Stahm on absolutely to be a contributing pitcher. You know, so we'll see.
Yeah.
But
and they've got time to figure it out. With
absolutely, he's only 23, so he's got plenty of time to figure it out. So I mean, if I had to pick a guy, that's probably the name that really jumps out at me, and it's probably because you know there was so much sort of tempered hype, if you will, going into the season about him and what he could possibly do. But so that's kind of
makes sense.
Yep. So that's a little bonus for you guys, but so we made it, man. We're mid-season. The Royals are a game over 500, 3 games back of the division, game and a half of the wild card. They're in this race, man, and it is, you know, they just beat the Mariners, and you know they took care of business against the Twins like they needed to recently. So they, you know, they're beating the teams they need to beat. Losing to the Dodgers, you can excuse that. They're the best team in baseball.
A lot of teams have done that.
So, you know, as we head out of this, as we come out of this break here and the Royals are full speed ahead, you know, we've got 30 out of the next 33 games the Royals are playing against teams with a losing record. So they've got a chance to make some noise here, and they've got 10 game homestand right out of the chute. The Rangers, who are another team that's kind of hovering around that that wild card, Detroit division rival, Chicago division rival. So that right there, that 10-game stretch, they really need to come out strong in there. You're looking at 7, maybe 8 wins in there is what you want to target. And the Royals, I mean, if they go 7-3, they're 51-46 at that point. And they've got 3 more games against Detroit, but in Detroit, and they go out to Boston. They've handled Boston pretty well, actually, this season. Baltimore after that, they've actually done well against Baltimore. And they got 4 games against Seattle, and they've got St. Louis with a home-and-home. And the Cardinals are not doing so hot this year. So, exactly.
Love it.
And they go to Chicago and then to Oakland. So that's kind of that big stretch there. And Boston being the only team above 500, the other teams all – you know, in paper and in practice are not as good as good or worse than the Royals. So all those series are very winnable. And then all that feeds right into the next series with Cleveland in mid-August. So that, you know, if the Royals make some noise and take care of business, so 33 games, say they go 20-13, you know, which is pretty good. Yeah. That's not even outlandish, really. That's just a solid stretch, and that puts them at 64-56. Going, I mean, who knows what Cleveland would be at that time? But I mean,
Cleveland could go 500 over that stretch. And
yeah,
you'd be right neck and neck with them, pretty much.
Absolutely. So, you know, that would be a chance with the 3-game series to kind of shift the division there. So Then they go and play Colorado, or that's at home, and they play Colorado at home, and they go back out to Cleveland there, or they go to Cleveland to play another 3 games. So after this 33-game stretch where they really need to make some noise, then they've got Cleveland 6 times in 9 games, and they'll have one more series against Cleveland for the rest of the year after that. So those 6 games, 6 out of 9 games – could be a huge swing in the division. If the Royals go 4-2 in that, or 5-1, best, you know, 6-0 is obviously best case scenario, but
right.
You know, 5-1 is realistic, 4-2 getting more realistic here, then, you know, you're swinging 2, possibly 3, 4 games in the division. I mean, that is so huge, especially with, you know, Cleveland having their injury woes, and you know, it's really unfortunate the health issues that Terry Francona has had, but you know, you do wonder how that affects the team and everything. So, you know, it's shaping up that if the Royals can keep this momentum going, things could really be shaping up pretty well for them, and that could be an epic couple of series there.
Yeah, yeah, that's going to be formidable. It's going to be really fun if they're still coasting at where, you know, we kind of hope they are, if they can get a couple of extra pieces. Yeah, that would make that a very interesting, very intense week and a half through
all
of that.
It's going to feel like playoffs.
Yeah, it really will.
Right there. And it's going to be that Cleveland series, if they're within a game or two going into that series, that's going to be rocking, and it's going to be a lot of fun to be out there. So
yeah. Yeah, hopefully we fill it up and
Yep. It's gonna be a fun rest of the season. I'm ready for it. I'm ready for Homer Demons to be exercised and for the Royals to make another run at this playoffs. So we'll when we come back next week, we'll have some more baseball to talk about. We'll be well into the second, well, not well in, but the second half will have started and we'll be ready to rock and roll. So stick with us. Next week we'll be here talking more Royals baseball as they hopefully make a run at this thing. Until then, be sure to visit our sponsors, Kelly's Westport Inn, obviously, if you want to go have a good time. Always a fun time. Mike, you were there last night?
Yeah, I ran out there last night.
Yeah, I wasn't able to get up and have a beer with you, but
yeah, we just kind of hung out. Nothing major, wasn't anything too big to advertise, but yeah, it was nice. I don't know if I'm going to be able to get out there too often in like August, so I wanted to make sure I got out there now.
Right. Yeah, Kelly's always a good place to be. So visit them. Visit BP Kansas City, of course. Lots of all the talented riders we have. Craig had a good article the other day about some of the Royals. I don't want to say lineup issues, but issues at the top where, you know, discussing with not only the issues that Escobar had early season, but then Whit Merrifield. People don't seem to be as upset with him, but since he's been leadoff, he hasn't been all that great. And it's kind of raised the question, what do the Royals need to do? What are they losing by having a poor leadoff spot, et cetera, so definitely go check that out by Craig Brown. It's a very good article. And he was on 810 the other day talking with Kevin Keatsman about it and other various Royals topics. So be sure to check that out. And then, as always, this week we'll have Friday Notes Flesky. He'll have some series preview for the coming series as we jump back into baseball for the dog days of summer, the long stretch here. So be sure to visit, read those articles and the many others that we post on the site. Everyone, Bus or Hump, doing a great job putting out some great content. So hope you all enjoy it and give us some feedback if you do or if you don't. You know, same with the podcast as well. So, yep. And thank you all so much for listening to this podcast. We love you all. And thanks for the emails, Rob in SoCal, thanks for the email. It's a good, very good question. Mike and I discussed it by email and then brought it up on the show. So, you know, anybody else has the emails or questions or whatever, you know, send them to us. We'll talk about them on the show. So thank you all so much for listening. Really appreciate it. I will be back next week. Until then, thank you all for stopping by. And as always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at bprokansascity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to KansasCityBaseballVault@gmail.com.